Welcome to the Psychomedia podcast. I am Timothy Swan and not Kieran Gillen.
And I'm Ben Fell.
Who are you not?
I was unprepared for that introduction.
Oh, sorry. It occurred to me just as I did it. I've really got to stop improvising introductions. Before we start the show, we usually have a very thorough discussion and we cover everything and then I do the intro.
You're welcome to improvise introductions as long as you tell me about the improvisations beforehand. I tell you what, I'm not in Star Wars The Old Republic beta, which is probably going to recur this episode because I'm particularly angry about it. Anyway, I am Ben Fell, and together me and the aforementioned not Kieran Gillen will be attempting to find the funny side of psychology, or this week the racist side of psychology, or at least the side of psychology that does racism. This has turned into a long monologue. Tim?
This is going to be our most controversial episode yet.
I doubt that severely.
Yeah, seriously, anything that involved animal cruelty, pretty much. No, we're going to be...
I was just thinking of like relationships and dating one. That was deeply harrowing.
Harrowing for you? Yeah, you had to get all the feedback. Actually, yeah, I was asked if I had a girlfriend this week, which doesn't happen to me that often, by someone who had literally just met me. So right. That was nice. We're going to talk about prejudice in all forms, although mostly... there's just only slightly being edged by racism. There is some sexism and religious prejudice in there as well.
Hooray!
So if you're feeling prejudiced against by the fact that we don't have anything about disability prejudices, well... I don't care. You can go and listen to our arch rivals. That's right. We're going to the feedback section. Our arch rivals actually turned up to kind of combat us this week, by which I mean we called out Lee and Herring to become our podcast rivals. And that was a week after I called for a personal arch rival. Well, Herring himself has appeared as a similar artist on our podcast page.
Damn you, Herring!
And having done that, I was listening back to old Collins and Herring, which slowly progressing towards their implosion. And in fact, if me and Ben have some disputes, we want to do something a bit more spectacular than their kind of, you know, just like will they, won't they, whiny girlfriend breakup thing. And they were making all hippocampus jokes. So having time travelled forward in time and stolen our jokes for their podcast, I time travelled back to Victoria Corran's first meeting with Richard Herring and fed her the line, "What is it like to be the less funny and good looking half of Lee and Herring?" Which, if anyone ever wants to use to me, then go ahead. Obviously, don't say Lee and Herring, that would be stupid. What is it like to be the less funny and good looking half of Psychomedia? If you say that to me, I will buy you a fish.
However, I mean, it's probably a good line, but it is worth bearing in mind that whilst I suppose you may be conceivably the less funny and attractive half, you are clearly the most recognisable and easy to remember in terms of name.
Oh, that reminds me of something. I went to Thought Bubble. No, it reminds me of an event at Thought Bubble. John Allison, who is my favourite webcomic artist, probably one of the most popular British webcomic artists with Scary Go Round and Bad Machinery, he knows who I am, and
wow.
He refuses to tell me how he knows who I am. I went to see him at Thought Bubble, and I asked him for a sketch there. I asked him to do a ridiculously complicated one that he pointed out that he really couldn't do without A, like 2 hours, and B, the photographic reference. So I asked for one of his characters instead. But we chatted, we talked about things, we talked about his podcast, and then we got to the end of our kind of discussion. He gave me the sketch, which is currently I'm looking at right now, Esther, the Goth Boxes. And then he said, "By the way, you're Timothy Swan, aren't you?" And I'm like, yes.
What?
Holding back my kind of hero worship, I've tried to keep it cool. And I've done better than with most people who were at that convention. And he is like, "Oh, I just have Darren Barrett Brown mind powers." I'm like, "No, really?" He's like, "No, that's it. I'm magic." And so
which response was presumably gah!
It was a bit frustrating, but more amazing than frustrating. I met a ton of people at Thought Bubble who listened to the show, lovely people, and a lot of them from the Monkey on My Back kind of crew, but not just that. And everyone who mentioned me said how lovely it was to see me and meet me in 3D in real life and how much they loved the show. And some people even apologized for not having listened to the last few episodes as if it was some kind of obligation they were under to keep up to date with it. You're not under that obligation. I mean, it's useless for me to say this because they won't get to this for some time, but...
No. You are under obligation.
No, you've got to listen to them all, but you don't have to listen to them within the week. That's the whole point of a podcast. Oh, right. It's the archive binge.
That is a long-standing staple of podcast listening. You need to have a day when you have lots to do, but as a result of listening to one podcast early in the morning, you get none of it done because you spend the whole day listening to podcasts and playing Minesweeper.
I don't understand you. What? Minesweeper, it's so like early 90s.
Listen, the problem with listening to podcasts is I can't just sit there and listen to a podcast.
Yeah, sure.
And I know a lot of people who like go running with podcasts, which I find slightly strange, but sort of understandable.
I do, but not walking with podcasts.
You know, I couldn't write an essay or like do anything even vaguely productive work-wise whilst listening to one, unless it's like utterly mindless data input or something.
Oh yeah.
So the only other thing that remains is like playing computer games, and anything overly involved, as in anything released since 2000, will probably be distract from the podcast. So it has to be something mindless and primitive like Minesweeper or Solitaire.
You see, I have to concentrate to do any good at Minesweeper. you said that you had some feedback from someone very close to our hearts, Ben.
Well, yeah, actually, this week I have some feedback from one Ben Fell, who...
friend of the show!
Special friend! Anyway, he says that... he told this to me in person, in my mind...
In your mind, you didn't go to a mirror. You've got the two kind of personae, the podcaster version and the pod listener version.
I had a little dissociated personality disorder moment, as we all do from time to time. This guy says that researching for the podcast, which apparently he's been doing, has expanded his immediately accessible knowledge of a broad range of psychological topics, which is true. Like the variety of topics that we've covered for this has resulted in me investigating in more detail than I would normally have done, even for like work, so many different areas. And this has actually paid off because like at least three times during the last week, I've had conversations with people from completely different fields in psychology with whom I can talk relatively knowledgeably about their own subject. And sound like I'm some kind of like psychology genius, entirely due to prepping for trying to think of jokes about the studies in question.
Yeah.
So from this, I deduce that if anyone is listening who is going to have to sit psychology exams anytime soon, the best way of revising for them is to record a weekly satirical podcast on the topics in question.
Yeah. But if you try and steal our thunder, we will rain down thunder from the skies upon you.
We will come down on you like a ton of hammers.
Oh, that is a good one. I've not heard that one before.
Nor have I. If that is all the feedback,
I think it is.
Point, but okay. What have you done this week, Tim?
What have I done this week? I've done lots of things. As I said, I went to the Thought Bubble thing. I've had a job. Ben, what film have you watched?
This week, I watched the latest, I think, Disney film, although possibly The Princess and the Frog came out more recently, Tangled. Which was their animated one that they did. And contrary to my expectations when I first watched it, which I must admit was not this week, it's actually really, really good.
I know a lot of adults who like it.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really awesome film. And it goes as far as Disney could conceivably go in undermining a lot of their own, like, immediate, obvious things about their films. Like, at the end, it almost seems maybe like... The happily ever after was as a result of the woman asking the man to marry her. They kind of bottle it, but they nearly did it. It's so close. They're nearly that good.
More so than Mulan, would you say? Mulan is my favorite Disney film by quite some margin.
Probably, maybe not quite as much of the like female empowerment, although it's pretty damn good for it. The only slight problem with it is that I now have a chronic fear of horses, chameleons, and above all, hair. Because if you have any vague, like, negative feelings about extremely large volumes of hair, then this is very much not the film to watch. It is exceedingly well animated and thus deeply, deeply sinister.
Yeah, I auditioned for that movie.
your hair is very poorly animated, Tim, but it is very sinister.
I have the right quantity.
You do. A dangerously large quantity. Does it glow when you sing?
I could test that, but I don't really want to subject my my listeners to all of the Puris and Revolution songs that are in my head right now.
Ah, the final thing to say about Tangled is that it has Ron Perlman in it.
Okay, which, how much percentage value did he add?
About 12. I mean, it was already pretty high, but yeah, it's these weird random things that you find out when you are trying to work out whether the evil witch is played by Susan Sarandon or not. And it turns out she isn't, but Ron Perlman is there. So I felt vindicated in my trip to IMDb.
Okay, the evil witch isn't played by Ron Perlman.
No.
And the evil witch isn't played by Susan Sarandon being played by Ron Perlman in one of those kind of weird meta things.
Not that I'm aware of.
Nicolas Cage plays Adam West playing whatever his face is in Kick-Ass.
Unless it was the evil witch was played by the actress who it turned out that she was played by, being played by Susan Sarandon being played by Ron Perlman, because I don't think IMDb has a setting for like meta acting.
Bwong! You have to go to the Inception page and then there's a special one if you go right down the page.
Was that bwong, your attempt to do Inception music?
No, I mean, it's just what I do like instinctively. I'm sure I could do a better
Inception music is more
but I'm much more interested in the nice bits of the Inception music.
I also got a new bike this week, which is
oh yes,
exciting.
Good point.
The joy of getting a new bike, as anyone who's got one recently will, I'm sure, attest, is that it makes you feel like you're 7 again. Particularly given that the new bike I've got is black, so now I can be a goth cyclist, and it's awesome.
Some of my best bikes are black.
That is would have made quite a good belaboured segue had we not already decided what our belabored segue was going to be this week. The only slight problem with it is it does have the most uncomfortable saddle known to man, and that is specifically to man. sitting on this bike is like watching the films Hard Candy or Teeth for male-specific discomfiture. And based on my experiences, I would kind of predict that in a few generations professional cyclists will cease to exist as a result of their saddle induced withdrawal from the gene pool.
Do you think they're hiding some great revelation? Because I went on a bike ride not so long ago because my dad got a new bike and he was like, Tim, come for a bike ride on my old bike while I go on my new one. I was like, thanks, Dad. And it was a fun ride, but it was uncomfortable, and I was just thinking, like, there's got to be a solution. Surely you can't do the Tour de France without some kind of improvement on this design.
Yeah, well, you kind of worry that they because they do it for so long that it's the cyclists that change and they have like they've got like a bony exoskeleton.
Well, I guess that organisms are more adaptable than bikes, at least in terms naturally. You can adapt a bike, although previously we've discussed how you can adapt a person.
This is true.
It doesn't happen as often that it's externally motivated.
I worry that this particular line of inquiry is leading us down a dangerous road, so we should probably move on.
Oh, I was just thinking about, improving, say, my character stats.
I hate you.
Yes, the non-disclosure agreement has been lifted. I can finally confess that I was in the Old Republic closed beta, and I'm now in the open beta. And Ben is unhappy about this, not because he's not quite in it, but that circumstances have contrived to mean that he hasn't actually managed to play any of it.
So, yet. Tim got in about a week ago.
I'm already level 20.
To the open beta. So he's been playing continuously.
I've worked as well, but otherwise, yes.
Well, yeah. I've received a series of cryptic and unhelpful emails from BioWare with things like, congratulations, you're in the beta. And then nothing else. And then, congratulations, you can now install the beta client, which I install. And then it's like, oh, you can't play it. No, that would be silly.
That is obnoxious.
And it transpires that I'm going to be allowed into said beta tomorrow at 10 a.m. I have a participant that I'm supposed to be testing tomorrow at 10 a.m. And then participants all the way through till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, at which point my parents arrive, who will be here until Saturday. I then go to London on Saturday for Thanksgiving with my girlfriend. and get back at about 4 o'clock on Sunday, at which point I'm meeting an old friend from university who will be around until late in the evening. And then the Freuding weekend beta closes on Monday, so I'm not going to be able to play it at all.
I wonder if I could get to level 20. By now. I was going to suggest that we did the podcast while we were both doing quests together. Maybe next week, that's what we'll do.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's literally just do that.
Yeah, but upon getting in, Ben is going to be faced with a difficult dilemma. First, having, and this is because he's already pre-selected which classes he wants to play, but after picking a class, you have to pick a race. And I have to admit, I was really torn between the two, and I was just kind of clicking between them. I'm like, Miraluka, Mirialan, Miraluka, Mirialan. And in the end, I picked Mirialan. They, I think, were a separate ethnic group of humans up until this game, where they're like, oh, they're similar to human species now. Stupid retconning. With green faces and common facial tattoos, but nice ones because they're all good guys.
Saying common facial tattoos makes it sound a little bit like they've got, you know, the Japanese symbol for love tattooed on on like their hip or something, or a butterfly on the small of their back.
They just, you got know, sailor tramp spot stamps on their face.
Imagine if you, what were they called again? The race?
Mirialans.
Imagine if you had like a chavvy Mirialan with, rather than all the nice like swirling and blocky tattoos on the face, they just had like some awful tribal stuff.
That would be pretty funny. I'm just thinking now of like the Zabrak Sith. Hmm. It's just like, if you date a Zabrak Sith, the tramp stamp is going to be a bit more extensive. You're going to end up looking like Darth Maul just because you went out with one. Anyway, the point is, we're going to mention, well, at least I am, going to mention the requisite level of Star Wars jokes in the show. The thing is, they have different racial abilities, right? And I'm kind of disappointed that in life, actually, no, I'm not. It would cause all sorts of problems. But one, you don't get to pick your race when you start, nor do you get to really pick your class, especially with decreasing social mobility. But you know, I did wonder, like, what racial benefits there were.
But that's the problem, isn't it? The idea of having racial benefits in computer games is literally just, let's apply stereotypes. It's like, oh, elves, you get, like, plus 10 to sneaking around. Orcs, you get, like, minus 10 intelligence. That's like the bell curve in fantasy.
Well, especially if you look at some of Tolkien's maps. Yeah. But, The one that I was thinking of was that I read this week that the Dutch average height is 6 foot.
Right.
Which stunned me, because it's much less than that in the UK. It's entirely because of nutrition and not because of genetics. It's right. Not like the Dutch are a super tall race, because it gives them an advantage of seeing over their, you know, apparently flat land. It's just they have great nutrition at the young age, thanks to their liberal state.
Well, there we go.
But it was just like, oh, right, Dutch. You selected race Dutch. Plus 2 to height. But yeah, what we're doing here is we're setting up the most belaboured segues. To say we're talking about, actually, we have already told you, but in case you haven't figured, we're getting towards the topic here of prejudice. Both positive and negative, by which I mean entirely negative. Actually, no, there's some positive stuff.
Sort of, there's some positive stuff which actually seems to accidentally find its way into the studies by mistake.
Yeah, basically.
So, full disclosure on this, we are studying prejudice, and this is probably as close that we're going to get to essentially me just talking about my DPhil. Because I do work in social psychology of the intergroup conflict research group, which basically means people being mean to each other for poorly defined reasons. So the studies that we're talking about today are going to be things that have cropped up again and again and again over the course of the last couple of years of my research, which means that I've probably prepared them less than I should.
Yeah, you have prepared them extensively, but with fewer jokes, because otherwise you could end up severely damaging your final grade.
This is the slight issue. I lived in a house in my second year, which we will come back to this episode, I imagine.
Oh, yes, of course.
A house with four of my male friends, and I had a wonderful time, and it was, I very much enjoyed living in a house for my second year. However, it must be said that some of my housemates were somewhat less politically correct than you might like. And the house was called Warwick Street. And whilst preparing my notes on, you know, racial bias and religious stereotyping and all this stuff this week, there was sort of like the ghost of Warwick Street leering over by my shoulder, making inappropriately unbroadcastable suggestions, which I have endeavoured to refrain from including. But anyway, that is full disclosure. This stuff is stuff that I do for like my job, such that it is.
Yeah. I can't make jokes about my job because I have a confidentiality agreement.
For all I know, I do as well. I didn't read any of the introductory material to my
course.
I only discovered that I had to like submit working hours in like seventh week. Anyway, we should maybe get on with the studies.
Well, yeah, the thing we want to introduce this topic with is an experience of prejudice in our own lives.
Oh, God.
Obviously, being white, middle-class, Oxbridge-educated, we don't get huge amounts of prejudice in our lives.
Hey, speak for yourself. I'm ginger.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You see, I'm hair colour blind. It's like Stephen Colbert, but slightly weaker.
See, I not only am I ginger, but I went to a secondary school where the uniform was a bright purple blazer and a purple tie. And the combination of having ginger hair and that walking through a town in Essex meant that I have experienced my fair share of prejudice. Although I'm obviously not going to argue that it's really what you would call, certainly not worth studying necessarily.
The example of prejudice I was thinking of, I think maybe happened in that said second year to you, Ben, didn't it? And I've actually been teasing this for quite some time by comparing us to the Bugle. Now, the Bugle, as we've said, is one ginger Jewish man and one non-Jewish man who looks rather Jewish. Ben, tell them why this is, in some ways, a false comparison.
So, the story goes, I was at a formal dinner with my housemates and some of our friends, I use the term loosely, in my second year. And one of these extremely loose friends, who I didn't know particularly well, and who, it turned out, is a bit of an idiot, leant over to me and in a kind of vague attempt to make small talk, said, "Oh, Ben, Benjamin, that's a Jewish name, isn't it? Are you a Jew?" Which gives you some idea of the level of stupidity and quite how much of a moron this guy was.
I'm Greek because I have a Greek name.
Yeah. So to which I responded, "No, I'm not." This sort of escalated over the course of the evening with this guy coming up to me and, amongst other things, apologizing for the Holocaust.
Which is weird because he really had no part in it, as far as I know.
Not that we know of. But anyway, this, unfortunately, whilst the ravings of a deluded fool at dinner, probably drunk, was overheard by my housemates, and therefore became a rather upsetting running joke, that I was Jewish, which I'm not. But it was a strange thing. So, due to the combination of this becoming a running joke and my housemate's lack of political correctness, it essentially devolved into a form of racism, whereby they would make
pretty weird one
racist jokes against my against my Jewish heritage, which I didn't have. Now, this is, you know, okay, so it's deeply misguided and probably not particularly nice, but it's essentially the sort of thing that goes on in a house full of five, like, university students, as any look in the national papers will tell you recently.
Oh, yeah, I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, so this is fine, but the interesting thing about it, as insofar as there is an interesting thing about it, was that when you have people making, you know, sort of racist jokes at you, even though it's about a race which I was not a member of, you do start to feel deeply, deeply put upon, and you start, it's almost like, what is it? Stockholm Syndrome.
Okay, yeah.
You kind of start to sympathize with the people that the jokes are aimed at, which is sort of you but sort of isn't.
Yeah, because these people would never make, for example, enlisting his two brothers to sing a rousing chorus of songs from Fiddler on the Roof, which gets bonus points for the kind of cultural knowledge to know about a primarily Jewish musical.
This is the problem. Like, having Oxford students making politically incorrect jokes at you means that they're very, very well researched politically incorrect jokes.
Yeah. I seem to remember they started labelling things with stickers saying "for the chosen people."
Mm-hmm. That was a particularly distressing birthday cake one year. I mean, there were a lot of distressing birthday cakes in that house, but anyway.
Now, I must confess, I kind of involuntarily find it funny, because it's one of those kind of sort of ironic things that is at such a distance from actual prejudice, but then also it isn't.
Yeah.
So I do feel guilty.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean,
the originality and creativity should be respected. The fact that it is basically racism should be deplored, right?
Yes, on both levels. It is an interesting study of a kind of going native in a way as a result of being subject to frankly unacceptable levels of racism.
So now if you do hear kind of an anti-Semitism thing, you probably feel more strongly about it than you previously would. So in a way it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of appreciating how uncomfortable it is to have, you know, racist jokes made against someone who actually is of that particular race or whatever, it's kind of good. And I mean, it does suggest that maybe a good way of stopping like UKIP members from being quite so obnoxious would be to make racist jokes about black people or immigrants towards them continuously. Although I doubt.
Oh yeah, those UKIP, they'll steal your things. Always coming out around here asking for scrap metal. That sort of thing.
Yes, that sort of thing. I doubt it'd make it into policy, but it's an interesting suggestion.
Well, we're not anyone if we don't try and make things better using jokes. Just a bit of an unusual sort of joke
this
week.
Jokes and racism. Who knew?
But yeah,
what's going to cure racism? It's racism. Who knew?
You know, they say fight fire with fire. We've just taken it to the next logical level.
Now, that is a better idea. It would be probably more sensible to fight UKIP with fire.
I'm going to step right back and say the reason that I wanted to mention this story was, A, I find it funny at a certain level of removal, and I've trailed it in lots of previous podcasts. Listen back. And B, it does lead us nicely onto a study about the confusion of ethnic and other identities. So I want to talk about the work of Shi et al. I think she is a woman. You get it. Was interested in the impact of stereotypes on how we react. We've seen that Ben being stereotyped as a Jew has actually made him more strongly anti-Semitic. Mm. Actually, in more real terms, because this is unlikely to happen to you, the stereotypes and the identities we have can actually really impact our lives. So there are some studies that show that stereotypes impact performance. If you, for example, remind a woman that women are stereotyped to be emotionally complex, and they'll do really badly on a test of remorselessly killing people using a spreadsheet version of the Death Note, but with more graphing functions. No, seriously. If you say, give women a stereotype of being bad at maths, they do worse on a maths test. Elderly people do worse on memory tests if primed with an appropriate stereotype about forgetfulness.
If you prime non-elderly people with information describing elderly people and stereotypes about elderly people, they will walk slower.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah. And basically, it's kind of weird because it means that if we adjust our self-classification in line with some great stereotypes, then we might do better at things. For example, I went to Oxford. So if I think about myself as an Oxonian who are stereotyped to be clever, then maybe I'll do better on a test of academic ability. Mm. And, you know, if I start to believe myself to be a Jedi because I've played too much Old Republic, then I'll be a lot more peaceful, balanced and skilled at amputation. But the trouble is, if I do that, those two things, then I'll kind of have two identities. I'll be an Oxford-educated Jedi,
Amputee.
No, amputator. It's a the very specific sort of surgery, but it's an important one. But yeah, which stereotype kind of controls me? Which do I access? Well, it might not actually surprise you that it's the one that's been primed or activated. It's all about the context in which it's done. So she et al. Wanted to test this experimentally rather than just kind of thinking about it or figuring it out. And so what they did was they found two contradictory stereotypes of a certain test performance. And that was a maths test. The stereotypes that they used were women stereotypes and Asian American stereotypes, because Asian Americans are stereotyped to be good at maths and women are stereotyped to be bad at maths. And both of these stereotypes are supported by the data. If you just look at maths test performances by those groups, the researchers are quick to point out, we're not just like being racist here. This is factually supported prejudice. But what happens, they wanted to know, to an Asian American woman? Do they just kind of fall in the middle? Do the buffs and bonuses cancel out?
Buffs and debuffs, Tim.
Oh, sorry. Whatever.
You're such a noob. Anyway, or possibly they just fluctuate back and forwards.
Yeah. Well, so what they did was they gave participants a test of maths and preceded it with a questions about their identity, either ethnic or gender. And they had a control test who asked some irrelevant questions. They didn't mention any stereotypes, just the identities. But they believed that the identities and the stereotypes were so kind of intertwined that just by thinking about being Asian American, it would prime that stereotype.
At least intertwined, given the situational context of a maths test.
Oh, yeah, sure. And basically what happened was that performance was best in the Asian primed condition. Then the control fell somewhere in the middle, and then the female primed condition did worse. It was a significant difference. The percentage correct was 54% for the Asian primed, 49% for control, and 43% for women. Which is one of those weird things about significance. If you just looked at those numbers, you say, oh, they're not that different, but it's all dependent on means and boring things like that. But it's interesting to note, just because two numbers look like they're a big distance apart doesn't mean it's a significant difference. So check your reporting. What they did also check was kind of the reasons behind this performance, but they had the same number of questions attempted, the same number of guesses, how well they thought they did, how much they enjoyed it, how much they thought it was difficult, how good at maths they thought they were in general. No differences between the groups. The only thing that differed was the performance, which is weird, because you'd think that activating a negative stereotype would maybe change motivation. You'd think, oh, I'm not so good, and you would do less questions because you'd feel demotivated. But it wasn't that.
That does raise the interesting point, because part of the, actually, once again, returning to my defil, the thing that I'm particularly interested in, and a lot of people within the realm of sort of group conflict and prejudice are interested in, is the fact that an awful lot of the effects that you find relating to stereotypes and prejudice occur at a unconscious or a semi-conscious level. You know, in this case, the participants in the various groups would probably be unable to report the fact that, you know, they felt that their group identity was, you know, influencing them on their test. But the evidence suggests that it is.
What they wanted to do was see what they could do about those negative stereotypes. It's quite interesting to find out that it has an impact, but they wanted to get some real life applications. And, you know, I think we should try and do the same. You know, how can we stop Mandalorians from being better at amoral aggression? How can we stop Saurians from giving into their stereotypes of themselves as cold and rational beings?
Give them a teddy bear.
One of the key things they did to support their stereotypes was comparing the importance of their findings, was they compared the performance on the maths test with this very small range of SAT scores. You know, those tests that we do in the UK and we finish by age 14 that the US used to decide who gets into university. But
satire.
A terrible, terrible joke at the expense of an acronym / initialism. It's an initialism. No, in America it's an initialism, and in the UK it's an acronym. The more you know. Basically, they all had really high scores on the math section of that test. These people were not just like of a range of abilities. They were really good mathematicians, and even this was having this impact. One final thing that they wanted to clarify was, was there some quality of Asianness that improved their performance? So they quickly repeated it in Canada. Canada doesn't have the stereotype that Asian Canadians are good at maths. So with the Asian identity prime, they actually did slightly less well than average, although all of the averages were better than the US score. That's the joy of staying in the Commonwealth. You do get a permanent stat boost to education. Should have picked a side, America. Should have picked a side. So you've just got to figure out if it's a true decision to the national character you're trying to roleplay.
Thing is, I mean, they kind of did pick a side when they invented the Star Wars mythos, didn't they? They're the rebels. We're the Empire. This goes to the stage that in the Old Republic, the game, if you pick Sith or the evil side, your character will have a British accent, and if you don't, they won't.
Huh, I hadn't thought of that. Because BioWare used to be a Canadian company, but now I think it's their American division doing TOR. Anyway, the point is that Prime to be a female Canadian made you actually really terrible at maths, much worse than a female American.
Really good at hunting bears.
Of course, the key to this sort of research is that they've controlled the priming quite strongly. When it comes to the real world, I mean, who knows which of your identities are going to get primed? Actually, I've got a study somewhere in our archive that we'll have to cover someday, that women would rather have a successful romantic life than do science and maths, which is a really unfair choice. You know, what sort of thing is like, you have one choice, you can be a scientist or have a successful romantic life. Well, I'm a scientist and, okay.
It's a grossly exaggerated dichotomy that has been successfully covered in great detail by the show The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, but they end by actually noting whether this actually raises the question of ability at all. Does ability mean anything if it's so changeable based on what kind of stereotypes are primed, the context in which things are done? And we do live in a world where in educational psychology, certain ethnic groups and genders do worse. So the thing I'm wondering is, might it be adaptive? Not in a kind of good way, but in one of those kind of brute force biology ways. Because is there a societal pressure on girls to not be clever or only be clever in certain ways? And I can say anecdotally that I observed it. But yeah, anyway, it's not that funny. We'll maybe try and come back to it if we can get in an expert on educational psychology. But it is fascinating. I'd like to give an official psychomedia tip here. Try and prime all of your cool stereotypes before any test of ability. Or try and change public stereotypes in the manner of Tony Law. Tony Law, Canadian comedian. He's got an amazing bit that I'll put in the show notes where he decreed that Belgians had no body hair. Nicaraguans have no bubble wrap, and El Salvador constantly mock them by standing on the border and popping it, which leads to the funniest geographical lesson of all time. The point is that he says, if you don't know any national stereotypes, just make them up. And I think that's what we should do, is just kind of, if you start stereotyping, the English are awfully good at science and engineering. Haven't you heard that rumor, Ben? That stereotype?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit,
actually,
a bit impolite for me to say it.
But they're really, really good. Like, you play a game of science and engineering against a British guy, there's so many British guys on the team.
Because today I started by priming my identity of being a psychomedia host, which means I'm going to be great at podcasting.
We really should have started off this podcast by, like, stereotyping each of us for various reasons of being, like, funny and intelligent.
Yeah. Next time. We know for next time. I hope.
We'd have to stereotype pretty hard.
Yeah, well, I know something that might be able to increase the power of our stereotyping. Ben, come on.
Oh, yeah,
Catch it. I've done the Hail Mary pass.
And it has just literally ricocheted off my face.
Which is weird, because normally it's the other way around.
Normally, yeah. But when it comes to catching belaboured segues, then definitely this is the case. So, yeah, the next study we're going to talk about leads on from both Tim's belaboured idea that certain contextual conditions can induce stereotyping at a greater level, and also this general principle of sort of unconscious processes actually having quite a significant effect on how we behave with other groups. So there's a little bit of background to this study. In 1992, Harris Dickinson et al. Wrote the following. I am the man who walks alone, and when I'm walking a dark road, at night when strolling through the park, and when the light begins to change, I sometimes feel a little strange, a little anxious when it's dark. However, had Steve Harris written seminal heavy metal anthem Fear of the Dark after 2003, he would possibly have added the additional words, and then I become statistically more likely to endorse violent stereotypes about black people. Because in 2003,
does it really scan?
Not really, but makes no more or less sense than Fear of the Dark itself. Because in 2003, Shaler Park and Mueller, who are psychologists rather than members of Iron Maiden, carried out, to my knowledge, they have had quite a few members, carried out a study in which they found basically that danger relevant stereotypes about black people, are more likely to come to mind when participants were in a darkened room than when the same tests were carried out under normal lighting conditions. Now, when we talk about danger-relevant stereotypes about black people, this is actually probably the most consistently cited stereotype about blacks, particularly black males, is that there is this idea of violence and criminality and kind of associations with gangs and aggression. I have independently confirmed this in my own research. You can do a thing called the Open Stereotype Questionnaire, where basically you just ask people to list stereotypes about a particular group, with big words at the front saying, you do not have to endorse these stereotypes. You just have to be aware of their existence.
Because I was thinking, you know, there's a big difference between identifying and endorsing a stereotype.
Exactly.
But the fact that you can identify it means that it's somewhere there, and accessible.
In your brain. Exactly. So, yes, there is this very pervasive stereotype across cultures that black people, particularly black males, are aggressive and violent. And this study claims to prove that if you are in a darkened room, you will be more likely to endorse and activate these stereotypes about black violence. However, it's not quite as clear-cut as it sounds. I've labored for a long time under the misapprehension that that was the precise finding of this study. Having read it in a little bit more detail, it's actually a little bit more subtle than that. So this effect was only found in individuals who had high scores on something called the Belief in a Dangerous World questionnaire.
Okay.
Which contained items like, for example, every day, as our society becomes more lawless and bestial, a person's chance of being robbed, assaulted, and even murdered go up and up.
Okay. I love the ones with the florid language.
Yeah. So possibly this should be redubbed Belief in a Daily Mail World. but basically what this means is if you're frightened about stuff in general, you get even more frightened about scary black people when you're in a frightening situation, such as having the lights turned off. Because this is the explanation for the finding, is that darkness, for humans at least, is a contextual cue to anxiety and fear and threat. Because, you know, muggings happen in the dark. And evolutionarily, tigers appear in the dark. So it's kind of like the evolutionary biological mechanisms that were developed in our monkey forebears to deal with the idea of, well, bears, for example, lurking in the dark forest, have now just been co-opted to warn us about, you know, scary black people in dark alleyways, which is unfortunate. And it's part of this vague pet theory that I have that someone else clever has probably already come up with, that we kind of have biological systems in our brain in place for like drawing associations between various things. And when we were cavemen, it was like, if something is yellow and stripy and it's dark, then run away because it's probably a tiger. And so it's like these sort of visual cues to threat and danger. And the problem is now there aren't very many visual cues to threaten danger in our day-to-day lives. But if our brains can draw an association between, say, a visual cue like dark skin and a stereotype of violence, then they do it with, like, alarming alacrity. And that's why this has become such a pervasive stereotype, because it's between, like, a really clear physical thing, i.e. skin color, and a pervasive stereotype. Anyway, that's not funny in any way. So one thing which is slightly funny is that this study was carried out by, as I said, a guy called Shaler, Schaller, Park, and Mueller. And Schaller in 2006 published another paper with a guy called Ackerman. The paper itself, very interesting, about the idea that people have a natural tendency to have better memory for faces of people that are the same race as them, which is, you know, is a very well-established effect. It's called the own race bias, and is obviously very significant in things like witness testimony if people of different races are involved. What Ackerman et al. Found was that this is reversed. This effect is reversed if the faces involved are angry. And of course, this meant that he was basically forced to title the paper "They All Look the Same to Me, brackets, Unless They're Angry," which is funny.
And it's interesting. It's maybe hard to mine a rich seam of jokes out of it. What I want to ask is two things. Does it only apply to violent, threatening stereotypes? So, for example, if I were to switch out the lights right now and you were to ask me about how good I thought Asian Americans were at maths, would that be activated?
So in the darkness condition, yes, that is not the case. So yes, it is just threat relevant, danger relevant stereotypes. So they did test. There was like a very, very subtle effect for stereotypes in general, but when they sort of paired out the data, they came to the conclusion that that was just kind of as a result of this sort of general negative feeling induced by being scared of the like violent stereotypes. So basically, unless you're particularly threatened by Asian mathematical ability, turning out the lights really wouldn't do very much for that.
Okay. I mean, it's just interesting. I was just trying to think of, I've been here trying to access all these racial stereotypes. Mm. I was trying to think of ones that were kind of violence related. Best one I could get were Maoris are good at physical sports.
Well, I mean, the one that I am currently interested in is, particularly in the UK and I suspect in America as well, over the last few-ish years, there's been much more of a resurgence in negative stereotypes against Arabs and Muslims, and as a side note, massively conflating race and religion when it comes to being Muslim, because of associations with terrorism. And I think that they're, compared to, for example, the black stereotypes, maybe not so much in America, but certainly in the UK, people probably don't actually hold, in general, that many really strong stereotypes about, say, black people being violent anymore. I think certainly the sort of the like white middle class English person is not really that frightened about, you know, black violence. But I think a lot of people, this is purely anecdotal, are much more prepared to sort of come out and openly say that they are scared about, you know, Muslims with bombs, and that if a young South Asian guy gets on a bus with a backpack, then they will be, you know, consciously anxious. So I think you probably could replicate this study of turning the lights off with using sort of, say, Muslim stimuli. Obviously, once again, difficult to do because Muslim isn't a race, so you can't do it with faces. Welcome to the meetings that I have for my DPhil. This is exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the Arab one and you could talk about the conflation, I guess. But even that is tough because the thing about the black and white comparison is that it's a really kind of clear distinction. It's quite hard to mistake one for the other, I guess.
It is. And this is partly, I think, this is not very funny, but it is exactly what I've spent the last 8 weeks trying to sort of reason out in my mind. I think part of the problem with the Arab Muslim race religion conflation, and it isn't even just like Arab Muslim, it's anyone who's vaguely brown, basically, is that you have these systems which like to associate like visual, physical characteristics with threat. Yeah. And the fact that it's technically like a philosophical or a religious concept that they are associating with threat, the fact that that is perceived, so being Muslim and terrorism, which is obviously in itself a massive stereotype, because there is a perceived association with being Muslim and having brown skin, it's kind of leapt upon by these association systems, and that's why you get this particularly bad conflation of race and religion.
Is there a sound element because I'm just trying to think about what would have happened during the whole IRA thing.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, hearing a Northern Irish voice, trigger those kind of fear systems at that time, when it's obviously like in the mindset? In the same way that you hear a barking of a dog is sort of a aggressive predator, but you're not necessarily being scared at the primal level because you're like dogs, but it's more wolves that are doing that.
Yeah, that is actually a really interesting idea, and possibly a way that you could maybe, I think, replicate this racism in the dark study. If you, rather than trying to show people pictures, you maybe had like interviews or something, and this is something I'm trying to work out with a friend of mine at the moment, who's doing some stuff where he's presenting people with interviews with, you know, which are either contain information about person's religion or don't. And I'm trying to think of a way that we can maybe co-opt that, the use of like auditory stimuli into this stuff. Anyway,
I have to say, I do like that kind of manipulating fake documents one. I read one on race in the media, and I'll just quickly say it was on a crack.com article, because they're quite good for psychology.
They are. They have a very, whoever it is that does their all their like six things about psychology that you never knew before, they're really good. We steal a lot of our information from there.
It was five prejudices in Hollywood that you'd really think would be done by now.
Yeah, I read
that. And it's all about the ethnic stuff and that. But they did this controlled experiment where they presented a fake IMDb page for a movie with an all-white cast, like, and various proportions of black and white cast to a full black cast, and then asked, you know, white people which film they'd rather see.
Yeah.
And they much would rather see the film with a white cast.
Mm.
Even with, I guess, this kind of social desirability of, well, maybe we should have at least a proportional cast, you know. What is the proper thing? I sometimes think that about representation. It's terribly, like, scientifically minded and not, like, personal minded.
Yeah.
I think, well, if I'm watching a TV program, the number of people in those roles should reflect the number of people in the setting who would be in those roles. And so you should research the, like, demographic statistics before
you
making
be
any TV show.
Providing an ethnically accurate sample.
Yeah, so like my big issue with the Avengers is that we all know in the superhero population, demographically, there should be more black heroes. shall I talk about my next study?
I think you probably should. I think we've sort of mined the racism in the dark for all it's worth.
Because the thing is, we like to kind of suggest that, as you've said, it was the people who believe in a dangerous world. They're scared of youths and robbers and racial violence and the rest of it, which is a kind of fear-mongering narrative that we like to think of ourselves as not having. And similarly, like the prejudices that we apply to ourselves, we can think, well, I don't really have much prejudice about myself. Well, I'm here to burst your bubble. You know, prejudice does come in many forms. Most of us, thankfully, don't act in an openly racist, sexist, or disablest manner. But don't worry, our brains are out there desperately trying to trip us up. I do have a look at, like, gaze studies and the rest of it. I think of myself, I'm not a very sexist or objectifying man. But I bet with, you know, a test of, you know, the low-level subconscious stuff, I'm just as bad as anyone else. Hmm.
Obviously, that's quite an important point to say, like, a lot of these implicit tests get sort of people dislike them because they think that showing that you have like unconscious biases means that you're secretly racist and you didn't realize it. Being racist is quite a specific thing, and it's very easy to tell whether someone's a racist. It's, you know, whether they say racist things and do racist things. Having unconscious biases is in no way the same as being prejudiced. It can lead to it if they're allowed to kind of manipulate your behavior, but in a lot of cases, you know, your behavior is not determined by your unconscious biases. Otherwise, well, bad things
to a greater or lesser extent. What I would say is, but like, for example, with that movie thing, the societal prejudices, maybe if you have that many people all kind of vaguely acting on their unconscious prejudices, just in lesser things. So you're not going to say something unpleasant to a guy or not sit next to a guy because he's a different ethnicity. But if you maybe write a story and it's always from a white perspective, or, you know, if it turns out that most of the people you hang out with are of the same ethnicity than you, you've not done something that's chosen to be racist. But clearly there are still issues. So I think there's this intermediate level on that, where it's like we participate in societal prejudice, if not personal prejudice. But maybe that's just me being like hand-wringing liberal guilt. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, yeah, I will talk about the nuance a little later. But the point is, there is a part of us, and it is a low-down part of us that doesn't always affect behavior, that is a little bit racist. Mm. In other words, the fellow Greenwald who wrote this study that I'm going to talk about was a co-author of Avenue Q. What Greenwald did, he loves to test implicit biases, came up with a new implicit test called the Implicit Association Test, or IAT. And it's based on this concept that the parts of the brain that are already linked work faster than those that aren't linked. And if you try and make two linked bits of the brain work against each other, they'll really struggle because they want to cooperate. So, for example, they use this thought experiment to start with because they couldn't be bothered to test this one. Say, if you train people to say hello to male faces and goodbye to female faces, then you do a different one where you're supposed to say goodbye to male names. There'll be this delay because in our head, names and faces are linked together. So if you're trying to do something contradictory in the same system where it's learnt, this association, then that will be a problem. And you can basically test anything by putting two things together, as I'll come to later. So in terms of prejudice, what they did was they set up a test where you... well, they set up three tests, actually. But the main one we're going to look at, you press a left button for African American names and a right button for European American names. To me, that seems a mite prejudicial to begin with, not because I have strong feelings against the right side of my body, but because I associate distinctively European or African names with that scene in Crash, where the racist cop is like, "What's your name?" And the woman says over the phone, "Shaniqua Johnson." And he's like, "What a surprise." You know, that assuming that you can kind of discern something about them just because they have a name like Shaniqua is a bit prejudicial to start with. But anyway.
Well, I mean, it's something that's particularly prescient at the moment because I'm actually at the moment trying to come up with an IAT that can be used to test like Muslim or Arab associations. There is one in existence, which is called the Muslim Arab Name IAT, which uses Muslim or Arab, yeah. Arab names. The fact is, it is kind of prejudicial to say that, you know, people already are making associations between particular names. That you know, that is all you need. The problem comes when you're trying to use this to test a group which don't have particularly not very well known kind of naming tendencies. For example, trying to do a racial IAT, a black-white IAT in the UK, aren't as many really like strongly associated black names in the UK than there are in America.
Well, yeah, shall I give some examples? White male names are Brandon, Ian, and Jed. The black male names examples are Darnell, Lamar, and Malik. I was going to say Malik is an Arabic name anyway, so...
And a name of a female character in Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Their white female names were Betsy, Katie, and Nancy, by which they mean names from the turn of the previous century.
Yeah.
Their black names were Letitia, Tawanda, and most obvious of all, Ebony.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, I've not met anyone called Ebony, although I do know someone's sister who is called Liberty.
What's the date on the original Greenwald study is like 85, 86, isn't it?
98. Quite recent, as it were.
Maybe not the original.
Okay, well, this is the one I found.
But anyway, yeah, so that is the other problem with trying to do IATs with names is they change every year.
Oh, yeah.
And they are subject to trends. The fact about the IAT is that you don't have to do it with names. It's a very, very flexible tool up to a point, so you can do it with pictures. You can do an IAT with black and white faces.
Yeah, but then of course that leads to problems if you don't have the distinctive pictures, as we've already discussed. Mm. So what you do is once you've got these pairings, you then test it with name words that are pleasant and unpleasant. So again, you go left for pleasant, right for unpleasant. And then they start mixing up the two. So it's left for black and pleasant, say, and right for white and unpleasant. And then you reverse it and you compare how difficult it is to associate the two sides together. Is it, do you have a quicker reaction when you're doing black and pleasant, or do you have a quicker reaction when you're doing black and unpleasant in the same direction? And if the participants have that association already in their brain, it'll be facilitated. So if you think, oh yeah, white are pleasant, not think, but if that's kind of a stereotype that's there on a low level in your brain, you will respond more quickly. They tested it three ways. First, they did a kind of control test where they test it with pleasant things like flowers and musical instruments, because goodness knows young people are fond of the piano, the violin, tulips, marigolds. insects and weapons were the negative category, which shows how little they know about how much I like bees with bazookas, which sounds a bit wrong, actually.
It does rather. But then again, it does prove that people are racist against insects.
It's, yeah.
The last,
also, they did this study in America. Americans love
acceptable
weapons.
Racism.
yes.
Gingers.
Apiarophobia.
Sorry.
I was just trying to do bees there. I'd like to quickly note, before I actually talk about some of the prejudice side of it, experiment one was administered on an IBM-compatible 80486 processor desktop computer. And I'd just like to pause the podcast while I'm nostalgic for my old 386 with its DOS 6 and its Windows 3.1. And then it got upgraded to a 486 in the same beautiful shell. Here I got a CD-ROM drive as a Christmas present so I could play all the new fangled games. Okay, no, back to the racism.
So, Tim, your levels of nerdery this podcast have been through the roof.
Yeah, I'm really going to have to try and do something cool next week.
Oh, dear.
and they did that test and proved that the supposedly pleasant things associated well with the pleasant side and not well with the unpleasant side. So just it's kind of a check. But it's interesting because it's weird choices of objects. Anyway, so the next part, they wanted to work with an ethnicity, pair of ethnicities who they knew already hated each other. It's so racist, this study. Korean and Japanese Americans. Because apparently Koreans are all still bitter about that whole occupation thing in World War II. And kind of fair enough. But it is a bit prejudicial to go, we want to prove that this works for ethnicities. Let's pick someone who we know for sure are racist against each other. Like, isn't that a
okay?
Bit...
So, sorry, Tim. Speaking as someone who does all this kind of work, I feel the need to defend social psychologists against your accusations of being themselves prejudiced. Slash, completely validate your argument. So it is a weird thing about trying to research, you know, racial bias and prejudice, that the sort of hand-wringing white middle-class liberal tendency that Tim already kind of alluded to is to, like, all racism is bad, distinguishing by racial groups is bad because it results in prejudice and all this thing, and we just shouldn't talk about it. And we shouldn't, you know, if you're accepting the existence of a particular prejudice, then you're kind of already validating it, and that's kind of a bad thing. Unfortunately, when you're trying to study it psychologically, you have to be quite blunt about the existence of these things. You know, you can't write an article about, you know, black threat caused by black violent stereotypes if every time you have to say black people are stereotyped as aggressive, you kind of get the jitters and try and sort of pussyfoot around it with
some people with stereotype black people as violent, but they're terrible people. But still, this is a very accessible stereotype in all our participants. Sure.
Yeah,
no,
it's bad. And the other slight upsetting thing about it is, which I have experienced myself on many occasions, is when you're trying to study, say, the interactions between black people and white people, if you're trying to test that in a place like Oxford, which according to a recent newspaper article, or a semi-recent newspaper article in one of our student papers, there is only one black person in Oxford.
Slight exaggeration, but distressingly closer to the truth than you'd like.
Yeah,
there was only one black Caribbean student.
It's slightly undermined by the fact that the one of the black guys in college was like, well, I'm here and it's not me. Anyway, yeah, Oxford is not a particularly racially heterogeneous city, at least in the student population, and certainly in terms of black, particularly black Caribbeans, as evidenced by that article, which means that if obviously when you're trying to run a study like this, ideally you want to get participants from both of the racial groups you're talking about and then like do a nice crossed design with the data.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm gesticulating and hitting my microphone. I was doing a crossed arms. Okay. Obviously this is like really impractical, because if you got all the black people in Oxford, you probably still might be a little bit under the numbers you need for a like a suitably sized participant group. So you have to segregate and you have to restrict.
I wouldn't use that word, Ben.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, that's kind of what you're doing. You're restricting your study based on race.
Yeah.
Which immediately makes you feel terrible, because you have friends coming up to you being like, hey, Ben, I'll participate in your study. I'll help you with your research. And you have to be like, I'm sorry, you can't. You're not white. And then you feel terrible inside.
Yeah. This is why you should not study right. No, obviously not. It's an important thing that you need to study. Because if we just ignore it, then how are we going to understand it or do anything about it? Anyway, so they did it with authentic Korean and Japanese surnames out of the Seattle phone book. And I think there's quite like a large Asian American population in Washington state. I don't know why I think that. I'm not sure where it comes from. It's just a stereotype. Those Asian Americans always living in the Pacific Northwest. I think it's just because it's like the
doing
West Coast.
Maths.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so they tested this implicit measure against some explicit measures. For example, how entrenched they were in social networks of their own ethnicity. I was desperately trying to think of a pun on Facebook that implied one ethnicity or another, but one, I'm pretty sure it would end up being racist, and two, I couldn't think of anything. Anyway, the tasks were described as discrimination tasks, which I think is quite fitting. And what happened was there were significant lags when associating the other ethnicity with pleasant compared to one's own ethnicity. So Koreans had trouble associating Japanese names with pleasant, and Japanese Americans had trouble associating Korean names with pleasant. And those implicit tests correlated strongly with ability in your own language, the number of friends or family of that ethnicity. One of the explicit measures of attitude, the feeling thermometer, was correlated, but the other, the semantic differentials, which are 7-point scales of various adjectives, the one I remember is beautiful or ugly, wasn't. Mm-hmm. But basically, by looking at the implicit test scores, you could work out to a really high level of accuracy whether a participant was Korean or Japanese American.
Yeah.
Before we go to the final part, I love the idea of a feelings thermometer. It's so stupid. You know, because I know we feel warm or cold towards people, but I'm not sure I could adequately express my feelings towards people in degrees of heat. I mean, at what number Kelvin does all matter turn to plasma anyway? Because that's how I feel about you, Ben.
What is it? Like, what is the double point of emotion? Word. Is it double point? The point where, like, you are both slightly vaporous and slightly liquid towards somebody.
Yeah, I suppose that would be a double.
I think we're conflating temperature with states of matter. But anyway,
yeah.
The great thing about the feeling thermometer is in the Qualtrics, the online survey software that we use in the department for distributing questionnaires, there is an option under the types of like questionnaire items you can put for a feeling thermometer, which is literally a relatively photographically accurate picture of a thermometer, which you like use the mouse to lift up the mercury to the level you wanted to, which is pretty awesome.
So yeah,
I mean the kind of point that you hinted on there was the fact that these sort of implicit measures, you might be back going to talk about this in a minute, but I'm going to talk about it now. You get sort of strange things when you try and correlate implicit measures with explicit measures like questionnaires. What you find is if the subject is something relatively kind of socially acceptable, for example, if you took questionnaire measures of people's feelings towards insects and flowers, and then their implicit scores, they would correlate very well.
Oh, yeah.
But the moment you do, you start testing something which is socially sensitive or subject to strong, like, social desirability influences, you get, like, no correlation whatsoever. So if you generally, if you take, like, explicit measures of people's attitudes toward black people, that there'll be, like, zero correlation between that and IET scores.
Yeah. So coming to the final one, was the white students doing black and white names. I assumed it was going to be crossed, but it wasn't. Anyway, they found that actually that this effect, this implicit effect, was stronger for white students finding it hard to associate black names with pleasantness than for Koreans doing the same test with the Japanese, when you might argue that Korean Americans at least have some kind of history and background to it. Now, again, the explicit measures, this semantic test, they didn't go, oh yeah, all black people are ugly, but they did show, and the thermometer, it showed a mild white preference, that they were warmer towards white people than black people. But then the IAT showed this really strong pro-white preference. Again, they tested like their levels of racism and anti-diversity, pro-discrimination. Those measures didn't correlate with the implicit measures. And this was on every participant. It wasn't just like an average where there was some good and some bad. It was every participant showed this effect. And so, you know, I have tried this back in the day. We did a version of it with a doctoral researcher. I think we both did it, didn't we? And I know when I went and tried the Harvard one, which you can do online, I did show a slight pro-white preference implicitly. And that's, it's not like a surprise if you've grown up in a primarily, well, actually, if you've grown up in a community where there's not as many black people, which I did. I grew up in a very kind of mixed white and Asian community, so I imagine if you did it white against Asian, it would probably come out more balanced. A lot of it is not so much familiarity as I guess kind of comfortableness, and the rest of it is, you know, have you got this threat as an outsider, because they said, oh well, maybe it's because of lesser familiarity in general, because Zions had shown that familiarity shows this impact on reaction times, and it shows a greater preference just to anything familiar regardless of what it is. But further research is showing, you know, faces has the same effect,
and this has been studied to a great extent by social psychologists. There is this theory called intergroup contact theory, which is kind of not exactly just that if you have contact with members of a different racial or social group that you become less prejudiced towards them, but like what specific conditions you need that contact to occur in. And that's actually what my supervisor spends is famous for researching. It has been shown to have effects on implicit measures like the IIT. There was one thing I wanted to mention. You asked whether you mentioned the fact that the Greenwald study was only for white participants.
Yeah, at least the one I looked at.
On the Project Implicit website, which is Tony Greenwald's website all about the IIT, because that's kind of his thing, one of the FAQs is, do black participants show a preference for black over white on the race attitude IIT? And he references an article by Nosek, Banaji and Greenwald, 2002.
Ooh, and
basically, it would seem that it's much, there's a very consistent effect with white participants for showing a preference of white faces. For black participants, it's much more varied, and it actually seems to sort of separate out into groups. So there are a significant number of black participants who show a pro-white bias.
Interesting.
But then there's a roughly equal sample of black participants who show a pro-black bias, and there are some who show kind of no bias either way.
Right.
And they reckon it's probably something to do with experience in whatever cultural environment they grew up with, and positive and negative associations and all this stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I suspect that the basic principle is that black people in America have a much, as a population, have a much more heterogeneous, like, racial environment. And it can vary
in America?
Much more. Well, yeah, for them.
Okay. I would disagree with the, I don't know, it depends on which part, but, you know, there are parts of America which are practically, like, racially separated enclaves.
Oh, yeah, no. What I mean is, across America, there's much more variety in the kinds of environment that they're growing
up in. Okay, yeah, sure. Sorry, whereas, I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah.
So that's my fault.
Yes, it is.
Anyway. Okay, I'd just like to say, we want to do our first ever piece of psychomedia research. What I'd like to know is whether we could learn other things about it, because it seems often used for prejudice stuff. What I want to know is if I secretly prefer sweet or savory foods, or, you know, I think there's a lot of things we could tap. No, what I really want to know is, who do you guys like better, me or Ben? And I have downloaded an IAT thing, which I'll put in a zip and put a link in the show notes for, so you can download and run it and send me the data. I did it myself, and I did it twice. The first time I did it, I had a lag of 1,660 milliseconds for Tim Pleasant Association and 5,043 milliseconds for Ben Pleasant. So very strongly in favor of myself.
Second, Tim, I have known for many years that you're very strongly in favor of yourself.
Yeah. The second time I did it, the Tim Pleasant lag was 4,832. Whereas the Ben Pleasant lag was a minute 820 milliseconds. And those were about like 2 hours separate. So clearly we need more data to work out.
Test which is better. Test variability and Tim being a, not ideal experimental candidate for reaction times, to put it as nicely as possible. Oh,
that's very much why I think the effect happened.
So was that the only stimulus you had was your name and my name?
No, I believe the stimuli are Tim, Timothy, Swan, Brunette. And the Ben ones are Ben, Benjamin, Fell, Ginger.
You weren't going to...
No, I put Redhead, sorry. Which
looks like a Jew but isn't, and is treated as a Jew but isn't.
No, I didn't, because that would be too confusing. It does tell you in advance which ones are which, because obviously I know not everyone knows what we look like. So okay. It does tell you at the beginning which ones you should associate with which, but...
That's really cool. I like the idea of us starting to do our own stupid research.
Well, I felt left out that I haven't done any research recently.
And it's also really
noble and worthy things.
This is not noble and worthy, but it's an ego trip probably for you.
I know, because it doesn't correlate with explicit measures. Obviously, explicitly, it seems most people talk to me than you at the present. I hope that will change over time. So my suspicion is that implicitly they'll love you.
The really depressing thing about this is that I've spent the last week intermittently trying to come up with an IAT, as I mentioned, and you did this in like 5 minutes yesterday, presumably.
I don't have to sensitively work out what a good stimulus for like a Muslim identity is. I know what the stimuli are for you, and they're your name and the female version of your hair colour.
Right. Well, this is really cool. So, yeah, this week's competition. Who can get the most prejudiced IAT scores?
Yeah, there is like a time cut off. You can't cheat.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an important thing to say about the implicit stuff, is that they're specifically designed so that if you try and fix your answers, they won't be recorded. So be honest.
Yeah.
But do try and be faster for me.
I'm not going to try and influence you either way, because I'm a modern liberal man who believes there shouldn't be prejudice against either Tim or Ben.
Ben good, 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 Ben good.
Who's Ben good?
Ben good. Ben excellent. Ben lovely. Wonderful.
Ben double plus good.
Anyway, so yeah, that would be the last study this week. So I guess conclusions to be drawn.
Prejudice is bad. I think we've covered ourselves.
Yeah, prejudice is bad. Prejudice is bad.
Discrimination is a bigger issue, I guess.
It is important to study. Just because you have implicit biases doesn't mean that you're a racist, but you should. The best thing to do is to try and become aware of those implicit biases.
Exactly.
So that you can kind of modify your own behavior.
That's
and,
the positive thing Greenwald said. People don't report explicit biases because they choose to not act on those implicit things. It's actually positive that it doesn't correlate, because these people know it's wrong and their conscious mind is overriding it.
Yeah.
So we can do that.
Mm. Hopefully. A small apology for this not being a particularly uproariously hilarious one. Once again, the problem being that I study this stuff, so I'm more inclined to talk about it animatedly and excitingly because I find it interesting than because I find it funny. Whereas other areas, I'm much more comfortable just like offhandly derogating and being irreverent towards.
I mean, I'm sure we could try and put some kind of joke together at the end. Okay, so an Asian American woman, a bad guy, and an atheist go into a bar.
No, they go into a darkened room.
And then it all turns out they're implicitly prejudiced against the out-group. Yeah, not much of a punchline, is it?
Not really, no, no.
We'll come back next week with something that is funny as well as interesting. We hope we have been funny-ish. That's funny. What we're hoping for.
Well, yeah, our game plan is always, if you can't be funny, be interesting, and if you can't be interesting or accurate, at least be funny. So, this week, hopefully the accuracy will be relatively high, given that I've written a number of, like, theses about this stuff.
That's my sound for accuracy. I'm not sure what my sound for funny is.
It's the like the canned laughter and or the tumbleweed.
Oh, yeah, I really should have started this podcast with an audio clip of Mark Kermode just saying, and here's an interesting comment from Timothy J. Swan.
Here's an interesting post from Timothy J. Swan.
I may do that. I may insert it in the podcast.
That needs to be your ringtone now.
Oh, yeah. Just on everyone else's phone, though, whenever I send them a text.
No.
All right.
Anyway, that's the podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week, and goodbye.
Goodbye. Those blasted psychologists coming over here, recording over our podcasts all dirty with their adherence to statistical power, their love of effect sizes. Oh, I can't stand effect sizes. It makes me ill. I always have the significance level when I go into a psychologist's restaurant. Oh, where did the lights go? Oh, I'm so scared, and not even in an implicit way. Oh, the Freuding psychologists. Okay, I'm going to go play The Old Republic now. And stop recording so you can't be too angry about it on the recording.